Welcome everybody to season 2, episode 1. I know Clink doesn't like that name,
it's
but
episode 11.
Episode 11, whatever you want to call it.
We haven't started anything new. It's the continuation of our first podcast series. So it's
season 2. It's a new year. You have to reset. 11.
No.
Whatever. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, welcome. Welcome back everybody. As you all know, we started this last year, challenged ourselves to knock out 10 episodes, and due to the, I guess I would call it demand, individuals asking for us to continue on, and who are we to say no? We enjoy it and love this process and getting information out to you all and the conversations that we get to have that hopefully help you all out there. So here we are. We're back at it. We kind of got some things scripted here for the next 5 or 6 episodes. We want to talk about some conflict resolution. Today, we're going to dive in to a question that was asked of one of our viewers from last season. What's the difference between studying for captain and actually fulfilling the role? And I was fortunate enough to be promoted recently, and Clink, I think, is on year four.
Yeah, like 3.5. Chugging along.
Somewhere right there. So, yeah, but quick 2023 recap. We did the 10 episodes. We taught an academy together. I believe it was the largest academy in our department's history.
Yeah. It was an experience.
Definitely. Managing that many individuals, I believe it was 64 or something around those lines.
Started off like 65. Oh yeah. Keep looking behind that curtain, man.
Yeah. Definitely something that you learn from, and it's kind of like the academy itself. It's a good time you never want to have again.
What was the thing? It's like getting a tattoo. You gotta let the pain subside before you do another one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the
for sure. Yeah, but always a good learning opportunity.
Absolutely.
And once we finished that, you jumped right into a TRT academy.
How I did. We went to the NFA. We went to the National Fire Academy.
Oh, we did do that. We did do that. Sorry.
Yeah.
NFA. Great experience.
I'm quasi skeptical with fire service classes, right? Like, they're either like life changing or they're bombs, in my opinion. And this was amazing. Like, this was if you can apply and go to anything at the NFA, it is, and it's not necessarily the information. I mean, the information, we went to a safety programs operation course. It was 6 days long. The information was good. But what made the class like life changing was networking, like getting to talk to like Oklahoma City and Mobile and Birmingham and Pensacola and in Culver City, California, and Cleveland, you know what I mean? Getting to talk to all these different fire departments about how they operate, and then bringing back, like, I sent some stuff up the chain for, one of the departments was doing a near miss reporting system on their target solutions. So like you can anonymously put in a pretty hard thing to bring forward, like just smart stuff like that. And then guess what they do? They look at, it was Mobile. They look at their, training reports for the year, or their near miss reports for the year, and they base their training the following year off of all those things. So just like really cool insight and networking into how other departments operate. Cause that's, you know, it's like major league sports and the fire service are essentially a group of thieves stealing the best practices and bringing them home, you know? So, that was awesome.
And I think we got lucky. I mean, I'm sure all the classes are great. But I can't think of many classes where I've sat in with instructors that would just kind of put a ball in the room and let the kids play kind of deal, where they would just throw an idea out and go, what do you guys all think? And then everybody would just turn their chair towards each other and just start lobbing out ideas and being able to bounce, you know, whether it be, you know, stuff to put in, tactics wise, if it was health and wellness stuff, safety operate, it was just so and then it would lead right into lunchtime. We're like, oh, we're carrying this over, and we go get our lunch and we'd sit around the table and just keep discussion, and then class would end and there's only one plate, there's one bar on campus, and you end up diving into stuff and realizing how small our world really is.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, great opportunity. If you have the opportunity to go out there, apply. There's all sorts of courses. It's free. They pay for your flight and stay. I believe you only have to pay for your meal ticket for the week, which I believe is $300.
Yeah, it was like 300 something bucks.
Something like that. So meal ticket and your time off of work is on you. But other than that, they take care of you. Yeah. Great time. I definitely look forward to going back. So right after NFA, then you went into a TRT Academy.
Yeah. It was our department put on, I think this is the longest academy they've ever had. It was a 2-month, pretty comprehensive TRT. I've done TRT before at the department I came from, and it was pretty amazing, especially for it being the first one of that length. I mean, we had different venues, got to dive into every single discipline. I mean, it was really put together, but it was on the tail end of teaching an academy, so I felt like I was in an academy for about 9 months, which is not conducive to home life. Like,
no.
My wife hates the 40-hour work week, you know.
Yeah.
She likes me gone for 48 to 72 hours at a time.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? Can you go to work, please?
Yeah. Do you have some place to be? Yeah. No. So.
Yeah.
Cool. That was awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So then we finished that. You finished that up, and then we went and taught. We were fortunate enough to be offered an invitation to go teach at the National Strength and Conditioning Association conference here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Over at the M Resort.
Yeah.
I will say that was the first teaching experience that I had that was fulfilling, that it just felt like everybody in the same room understood the message and that we're not crazy. So it's just good. when you finish, and I think we did hour 15.
Yeah, it was an 80-minute, I think it was 80-minute presentation, and then we were right before lunch, we probably had 30 minutes of questions and one-on-ones, yeah, for thereafter. Yeah. So it was, and it's a, I don't know, to me that was probably, it was probably the biggest venue I've ever taught in front of, outside of, that was probably more than the academy. I don't know how many people were in that room, and it was filmed, and it was sent out, so like, that was probably the largest venue I've ever done.
Yeah. Now that you say that, I didn't even think about, yeah, for sure. Pretty big ballroom.
Yeah.
It was awesome. what's up?
I was going to say, yeah, then what? Then what do we do?
I got promoted.
Oh, yeah? That was around that time. Yeah, right at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Which has been awesome within itself. A lot of self-reflecting, you all know, most of our viewers, I got some pretty big shoes to fill. In my mind, they're not fillable, but when your uncle and your dad work for the same department and pretty highly regarded captains, and it's daunting, but I'm up for it, and there's going to be a lot to do, so much to learn. That is the fact of, you know, you have a lot to learn, but now it's a different perspective of telling the people that, you know, see you as their supervisor, like, hey, I don't know all the answers. Like, yeah, we're going to grow together.
Yeah.
That's been a big thing for me. Especially at the station that I ended up fortunate enough to be at. I got guys that are 4 or 5 years on, and I got some people that have 8 months left. It's just such a wide variety of people, and trying to be the support and the different guidance for that wide of range has been a challenge, but it's been good. Yeah. I've been enjoying it. But yeah, so that was essentially the 23 year. Anything else I'm missing there?
No. I think that summed it up.
Cool. So essentially, we decided to kick this back off, and it was only right to get into one of the questions that was asked of us from a guy over at a neighboring department. And it was, hey, man, like, what's the difference between studying to be a supervisor or studying to be a captain and in real life? I think now that I've gone through it, I can say that there's even a difference. Like, studying for engineering and being an engineer, for the most part, I won't say definitely, for the most part, the numbers fit. The numbers are numbers. I got water coming in, going out. I learn my capabilities. More so cookie cutter job, right? Where this has been like, I mean, as you know, no matter how many inboxes you do, you can get to work one day and be like, what is this?
Right.
So we got a few questions that we're going to go through, and we can just touch a couple of them before we bring on our first guest of the season. What's something that you've learned in regards to personnel, not tactics, but going from medic to captain? What was something on your learning curve that you had to adjust to, or that caught you off guard?
So you kind of hit it pretty good on the head with like an engineer. You've got water coming in, water going out, right? Medics are, you know, you get your initial assessment and you're going to follow this algorithm. And even the tactical side of being a captain, like, I'm going to arrive on scene, do a BIR, apply standard tactics to standard problem to achieve standard outcomes, right? Like, you've kind of got, and it's not cookie cutter and it's dynamic, but you've kind of got this flow and algorithm. Like, the personnel side of leadership is like theory, right? It's based off of, because you can say all the right things in a assessment center, right? Like, you can be dynamite. Actually doing it is a completely different ball game, right? Like, I feel like we get paid to like form relationships, like with individuals. Like, you can't have, the way that, you know, you treat your kids is different. I've got three kids, and I treat my two daughters, I can guilt into doing stuff. Like, I'm just so disappointed. I can't believe you'd act like this. And my son, I have to get a scary and threaten him with physical violence, right? Like, that's the difference. You have to have different relationships with everybody that you work with, because that's how you're going to like enable an environment for them to grow. And that's the hardest thing to do. Is like, that's where you make your money. Like, because like, what I need from my chief has what, 11, each battalion chief has but 11, 12 captains that they have to deal with. You're looking at like, what I need is completely different than what a neighboring station captain needs. It's completely different than what my co-captain needs at my station, you know? So like, in order to be an effective leader, you have to form, and because there's also like, where am I going? Right. Like, me as an individual, what are my goals? Like, what are my strengths? What am I more apt to do? You know, and forming that relationship is the hardest part of supervision and being a leader. Because if you don't form a relationship and somebody just comes to work and they don't feel valued, they're not going to have any buy-in. They're not going to have any ownership. You've probably not invested the time to find out what their goals are, what they're like, sitting them down even early, like, sit down your probationary people and be like, what's your 1, 3, and 5? And they're like, I have no idea. It's like, well, let's start working on some. Yeah. So you have some stuff in the tank that you're like actively going through. You're not just existing while you're here. Like, let's start moving towards something, you know, like, if doing the medic thing's not your gig, and you've got some time, let's start talking about hydraulics, right? Let's start talking about, you know, aerial ops. Let's start talking about stuff like that. That's down the road. If that's something that's a 5-year goal or a 10-year goal for you, we can start doing stuff now. So by the time you get there, you're not cramming, you know. Let's start developing you in other ways, you know. So I don't know. I think
on that side, I mean, and I think it just maybe from the conversations we have, I used to think like that, and to kind of go like, hey man, like, what's your goal? What are you doing? What's your plan? Like, I want to help you, kind of like that. But then we've had a conversation recently on the plane, actually coming back from Missouri, which we did not talk about. about different types of motivation and how people intrinsically motivated, amotivated, like all these different types of motivation. So now I've changed my approach or questioning of understanding, or maybe just visualizing things differently and really going, okay, this person is motivated by XYZ.
Yeah.
And being able to maybe assist them in seeing that. Cause I mean, to go into the personality trait thing that we talked about before, we're sort of the same way, like that, writing stuff down and checking things off, and where if there's nothing to put on the paper for a 1-year plan and looking at, okay, I got to write this paper today, or I got to get this course or this certification. If that paper was blank to us, that would drive me crazy. I won't speak for you. That would drive me nuts.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah,
some people, they don't want to have anything on the piece of paper. They're not wired like that. They kind of operate day to day. And then one day they'll go, you know what? I'm kind of ready to test. So now the challenge is trying to maybe provide that, to be able to see like, hey, you don't have to wait until a job announcement comes out, or, you know, there's a training opportunity on a structure to go, you know what? I kind of want to go work on that. Like, let's be proactive in our thinking, in our development. So that way we kind of learn not only our career better, but then we learn each other better with that open communication.
Well, and that's, and like I said, that falls back into building a relationship, because you're going to have no idea what motivates somebody unless you spend time kind of getting to know who they are, like what drives them. Right. And even if you're not setting goals, like to become a promotional goal, like I feel like most firefighters, one of the weird quirks that we have is we all kind of care about our reputation, right? For the most part. So like being somebody that somebody else can rely on, because that's what everybody wants when they show up to work, right? You want to have a partner or a supervisor or somebody that you're at the station with that you trust. So even if it's just, hey, you know, this is an area of weakness, how about over the next year, we take some classes, or we'll do some training, or we'll hyper-focus on this. Or if you want to build work capacity in this area, we'll work on load carriage or whatever it is. You know what I mean? That's something that's easy. That's not even like that lofty goal that, because I think some people are nervous to set goals because they feel like they'll never achieve them, right? Which honestly, it's better to not achieve a goal and set them than to achieve every goal you ever set, because you're not going to, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to learn the process. It's better to fail at something more often than succeeding, because every time you succeed at something, you don't learn that. You don't get that, you know, that tenacity or grit to, like, you know, have that extension. I don't know. So like, I feel like sitting down with people and really just kind of, and that's part of being the supervisor, is like, you're going to be assessing their strengths and weaknesses. And honestly, their strengths probably don't need to touch on that often. Like, their weaknesses are what we should probably center training around. And even if you do it in a manner that is company training, in-house company training for that individual, if they're not the ones coming forward with, hey, I need to work on this because they're, you know, ashamed or self-conscious, you bringing it up and pushing it forwards, important. And that's you getting to know your people, you know?
So, before I forget to bring this up, cause you had mentioned, the family earlier today with the 40-hour work week and how things changed, and you just talked about spending a lot of time with your personnel and being able to dive into their needs. One other thing that's changed, or you let me know, stepping into the supervisory role, has your day-to-day changed? Have your 4 days changed?
Oh, yeah. I used to wonder what my captains were doing all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's, yeah, because you've got a lot more planning to do. And when you're a firefighter, your goal is to show up and perform work, right? Which is pretty, I miss it. I miss just showing up and doing that. As a supervisor, like, a lot more, you're planning out, you know, 48 hours. You're making sure that, you know, units get to where they need to get to. You're making sure that training gets done. You're making sure that, you know, people have, you know, scheduled appointments that they're making. It's just like a lot of logistical stuff where, when I was a medic, I'd show up to work and I'd do my job. And I still took classes and stuff on my off time. I stayed pretty proactive with my skill set and career. But like, no, I wasn't planning it for somebody else. You know, like I got, I'm on my spring break right now, technically. And so this week I'm planning training and stuff for the next 7 weeks while I'm in class again. So like over my 4 day, like I plan out like little things that I want to do or need to do with the crew. And it's like, I never took the work home with me as a, you know, medic.
I feel like, are we allowed to talk about what you're on spring break from? We haven't mentioned that either.
Oh yeah. I, because you've made it uncomfortable in our friendship, I started my doctorate too. So, I started my doctorate. Yeah. I started my doctorate in, educational leadership with an emphasis in crisis and emergency management from, Louisiana State University, Shreveport. So it's awesome. 7 week blocks. Yeah. Which is a blur. It's a blur of work.
Year and a half, 2 years.
It's 2 years. It's 6 hours every 7 weeks of class. So there's 4 weeks.
Fly by.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real easy. My, my family's really excited about it. it's just, I feel like my brain's mush usually by the end of the day. So, which was you know, like that, I made some life changes due to this program. You know what I mean? Like you had to cut some things out of life, how to get to different places. And I mean, it was hard. It's a lot of sacrifice, but I'm actually kind of enjoying the, I feel like I don't know if yours was the same. My bachelor's degree was, it was to stay eligible to play football. And so it was mostly cooking classes and like military Perfect. Science and rural sociology and agricultural economics. You know what I mean? Like,
History of music.
Took that one. I smashed that one. I took a lot of theater classes because there was no tests and they didn't care if you missed class. You know what I mean? Like,
was that the class you said you would read lyrics, songs to lyrics? Oh,
yeah. They'd have me poems. Read poems. Yeah. Yeah. I'd read a Garth Brooks song and they'd be like, wow, that's really deep. I'm like, I know. This artist named Garth Brooks. Yeah. Garth. This poet Garth named Garth. But yeah, so like, you know, I was like, education is pretty stupid. You know, like I just felt like there was no applicable. And after my master's, I was like, wow, there's actually some good upper level education out there that we could bring back to the fire service.
It's backwards. I always tell people like they like, it's gotta be so, you know, like all the books and the written, you're like, honestly, the higher you go up, the less structure there is. There's a lot more, not as far as APA. Let's not forget about APA because they will lose their mind if you don't structure things correctly. But it's more so taking the methods and theories and applying them to your own. What is that?
No, this is the APA manual. Like I'm living and dying. APA manual.
Perfect. Yeah. See, told you. But it just is like you're working on your own topic. Like you get to pick what you want to study, what you want to dive into.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like you have a lot more autonomy. So then like I can direct, like honestly, like my dissertation is probably going to be on burnout, like silent quitting, demotivation of, you know, firefighters in the fire service. You know, that's kind of the direction that the whole, I'll probably have that kind of started. I'll start tackling that, I think this summer or early this fall, like my chapter two of my dissertation. So,
and I'll be interested to see how you perceive it now compared to when it ends. Cause when I started mine, they were, it was capped, I think at 70 references and, had to be under 60 pages or 70 pages. I don't remember. And at the beginning, I was like, what do you mean 70? Like, I'm going to need 20. I don't need. Yeah. And then by the end of it, you have so much information that you're just like, hey, I need more pages. And like, Yep. If you can't get what you need to get across in that in 70 pages, you're missing the mark. So, and your perspective of it changes. So I'll be interested to see what you think of that. And lastly here, before we bring on our guest, toxic handling. I know I told you and Battalion Chief Whitlock that you two, well respected, well trusted, handle a lot. Just the phone calls and there's firemen probably all across the state and the country that'll call you and go, hey, look, this is what I got going on. Has that increased or stayed the same, decreased as far as getting promoted?
It definitely increases. Because now you kind of have a framework of how to navigate issues a little bit better. I feel like it's a big trust issue, right? Like, I feel like a lot of people are going to come out to, reach out to people that they have a relationship with, if they got something personal going on. Because when you get to that point, you don't know, what the outcome is going to be. You don't know if, like, hey, I've got an addiction problem. Am I going to lose my job? Right? Because we don't have a safety net with that, right? Like, it's you're going to go to rehab and then you're going to go. We talked about this with Randy, right? Like, you're going to go to rehab and then you're going to be on like a last chance agreement, and then it's termination. So, like, somebody reaches out to you, and I'm not saying somebody has, I'm just saying, like, using that as an example, like, you've got to figure out how to navigate that. You got to figure out how to, you know, the proper channels to go. Like, I mean, like, first off, this is like kind of where that training comes into place. You start with like, hey, are you good? Are you okay? Are you safe right now? Like, do you need help with something? Like, do you want to meet? That way you can get eyes on them so they don't do something stupid. You know what I mean? Like, that's where, hopefully that's kind of like part of the assessment center training that most captains go through, right? Like, that personnel problem, hopefully the first piece of it you take and you are caring about the individual, because that's what you should do, right? Your first thing you should do is make sure that they're not going to hurt themselves. If they tell them that we've got a ton of resources available, like, pushing that forward. But then, like, you know, people are going to call you, and then people are going to hear through the grapevine that, you know, you've helped out with some stuff, and you're just going to keep getting hit and hit and hit. And I don't know. It's kind of rewarding, you know, but at the same time, you're like, there's just so much, like,
you're aware of too much.
You keep looking behind that curtain, man. And like, I'd take the blue pill and go back in the matrix if I could, you know what I mean? Like, you just keep,
yeah, for sure.
You just keep going and going. And it's like that. And this is kind of therapeutic, right? This is, we were trying to, you know, push all this information, and like, this is an avenue where we can do it. And, this is like my toxic handler, you know, I can pour some energy and time and positive thoughts into this. So I don't know. Yeah. Have you seen it since you've gotten made? It's more, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. And it is, I don't know if it's because of the rank thing, or like you said, the words kind of word gets around of I've handled certain situations already, or, you know, there's that trust thing, and it does take time to develop that trust, where people are willing to be vulnerable with you, knowing you're not going to judge them, that you have already dealt with stuff previously. Oh, yeah. And it's handling that with like that care, and not going like, what the hell are you thinking? Or, you know, we obviously can't do that. It's definitely a listening first deal but yes, it has turned into, it is frequent. But yeah, it's a gift and a curse. But like you said, being on here, mandating that we do this, I mean, you guys, we went and bought mics and cameras, and it just because we could with our schedules being on opposite platoons, it would have been easy just to go, hey, you know what? We could only do it once a month or, you know, whatever. But I don't know if you feel the same way, that this is just as important just to get on here and just talk, to get ideas out and then answer emails or text messages or phone calls or, you know, you go, we had a huge retirement party about a month ago,
about 2 months ago, early January.
And dude, there were so many retirees there that were like, dude, we love what you guys are doing. Like that, I listen to it while I'm working in the garage or, you know, that. So it's like, oh, okay. So there's positive to that handling all this, being a toxic handler and trying to disseminate information for the better, it doesn't have to be a gigantic reward of what I'm not saying any of this has happened, but you know, someone getting out of rehab or, you know, talking somebody off the list, it doesn't need to be, or somebody coming back from a blown shoulder or whatever it is, or getting promoted. It can be a small thing of like, hey, I enjoyed, you know, listening to you two babble for an hour. You're like,
they enjoyed episode 11,
season 2, episode 1. But with that said, speaking to someone that is honest, a great leader, willing to be vulnerable, always willing to be there for you, our first guest of this season is, I can't put it into words. I'm not going to talk him way out of, you know, he'll get mad at me once he listens to this, but he's that guy in my heart and mind that I can call any time of day and he's there, judgment free, and to offer advice. So with that said, Chief Eckert.
How you guys doing, gentlemen?
Good, good.
Good, good, good. Thank you for joining us.
Fantastic, by the way, both of you.
Always appreciate it. We wanted to start with, we got a question from one of our viewers from last season that we kind of took a second to wanting to address it, and we thought you'd be the first, a great person, I'm sorry, to bring on to help address this question, and a few other things we're going to dive into as far as conflict resolution, toxic handling, things that are maybe different from being a BC to being a captain. But firstly, what would you say is the big difference between actually studying for your current position and the real world? Like, what was the difference, major difference from textbook to, oh, this is real life?
You know, the reality and the brevity that the decisions that you make aren't, you know, in the practice format or in preparing for a test, you have firefighters that their capabilities are absurd. They can do everything. You say something and it's done, right? You check a box. And the reality of, you know, going into the actual position is, did I communicate my request or my desire well enough that the person on the other side who's receiving it knows exactly what I want them to do, right? Based on the conditions that I see, am I putting them in a position where they can be in hurt, harm, or danger based on what I said and what I'm seeing? Is the biggest change that I can see, because it's been many times where I've had a command or a desire on the fire ground, but it didn't get fulfilled because it was either I didn't communicate it effectively enough, or they just didn't understand what my message was. And that, when you're studying, I don't think you can prepare for that. I don't think you can prepare for your desires not to be accomplished. In the study session is, I said it and it happens. In real life, did you say it correctly? And is it being executed to your desire?
Have you found that moving from captain to chief, it's kind of the same, like nerve period, I guess it would say, like calling that first big fire, having that real tough conversation. I mean, was it the same, or is it next level? You know?
You know what? It's next level because of the weight of what you're doing now, right? Your role and position, like being a captain, I was a company officer for several years, and I got comfortable, you know, being in the hot seat, so to speak, being first in and being the first one on the radio, knowing that I want to set it up a certain way for that chief coming in. But now on this side, I've been set up correctly, and then I've been set up like, man, I got to fix a couple things. I'm behind, right? So the nerves, I think, will never go away as you change or transition to each position, and you're placed in this great position of always being like on your toes, which I love, right? It's nothing's ever the same, and the challenge is always there that it might be something that I need to fix, or it might be a direction that I need to maybe push this to make this scene, incident, this conversation go the right way. You know, am I getting the desired results based on what I'm saying? Kind of that message is I think it changes, at least from role to role.
Okay. So, I mean, and mostly what we're talking about is tactics, to shift a little bit, that being the in-house captain, being there for your guys and gals daily, to being, I don't want to call it an outside word, but you know what I mean? You're their chief, but you're not in the station with them daily, and you're trying to, you still manage, and you're great at still keeping those relationships. Has it been a change personally for you, kind of, you know, being in your own office and still trying to, you know, make station visits and come eat chow every now and then, but not overstep, because the chief's always, is that something that you're naturally good at, or is it just that you work on?
You know, it's tough. I think I work on it. I think I do have a little bit of that skill set about me, but I do work on it, because it's easy, I think, with my personality to come in and be a little overbearing. So if you don't have a strong personality and you're trying to develop your crew as a company officer, it's easy for me to come in and maybe crack a few jokes and be jovial. And now I have the attention and the hearts of your crew rather than you, you know, as a company officer. So I have to be, you know, really cognizant that I'm giving that officer the time to develop and grow himself. I have a lot of new officers in my battalion. So to help them kind of grow, I have to step back. I kind of liken it to this. I have adult children now. I have, you know, some.
Ones outside of the fire service.
Outside of fire service. But so my kids are adults now, right? But they're still my kids at the end of the day, right? I've watched them grow up. I raised them. I did all these things. But our relationship is changed. So I feel like when I was in a station as a station captain, my role was to be, you know, that figure in the station, you know, providing the support, providing the motivation and the direction for my crew members, helping them get to the levels that they wanted to get to. And now I feel like I got some supervisors who they need to now develop. I have grandchildren. I'm helping my children now parent their children, right? But the grandparent role is much different from the parent role. It's a little farther away. It's a little step back, right? It's more instruction and it's more assistance rather than actually doing. And I feel like that's kind of similar to the battalion chief role that I at least try to embrace, because I want to assist and help develop and watch them do the same things that I was able to accomplish or even do better with their crews. Hopefully that answered it.
Yeah, like that's one of the main tenets of adult learning too, right? It is like we as adults, you don't need like a teacher that you had in elementary school. You essentially need a facilitator that's going to help you like be there to bounce ideas off of and kind of help facilitate that learning growth. But like you don't, like that's the cool thing, I guess, about your position right now too, is like you've got people who've have some experience, they've tested, you know, now they're like, hey, you've done this. How would you handle this? You know what I mean? Because if I still haven't had to do like a formal discipline, and if I have to do a formal discipline, I'm going to call my battalion chief and be like, hey, does this sound right? Because I've right. never done it. You know what I mean? I've handled
right.
all the little stuff. I've been lucky to handle everything at the lowest level. I haven't had to, you know, get into ones and twos and, you know, human resource stuff. So like, I look at that at like a key tenet, like I said, of adult learning is, the teacher is now a facilitator. And like, that's kind of how I view battalion chiefs, you know, or how they should be, right? Is
right.
help that captain grow, you know?
So. Yes. And I don't want to, you know, keep it and make it seem like I can't learn either. Like I also have some very, very experienced captains who, and I don't care. Like even in my expectations, I say, look, I need to learn from you. Teach me something that I don't know. Because that makes me a ready and receptive, that adult learner, like you're saying. And now it's a relationship back and forth rather than, you know, this kind of dictatorship or supervisor subordinate relationship. Right? No, technically, yeah, I'm your supervisor, but we're both supervisors. So let's steer this ship together and be effective as a team.
For sure. Yeah. And then speaking of the supervisory role and having to manage, whether it be formal discipline or not, Chief, is there any, as far as conflict resolution, I can consider, I mean, both of you guys, and there's a few people on the job that I can go to no matter what, and I will get a clear, like precise, honest answer, not looking for fault, not looking to blame the other side or to give a true, honest reflection on a conflict. Is there a certain technique that you use? Is there anything that you've practiced over time to manage if you do have, I mean, being a supervisor, if you do have a conflict, whether it be with a customer or somebody within the station? Is there something that you've used in your time as a supervisor?
Yes, for sure. I learned something a few months ago that it was a leadership principle that was shared with me from another leader in a different industry. And this thing, what I'm going to talk about, it helps me really kind of guide a conversation or really deal with some conflict. But I want to say this first. The first thing you have to deal with any type of conflict resolution is that internal conflict that you have within your own self, right? Ugh, I don't want to deal with this, right? Or I want to deal with this too badly, right? Now I'm upset and I want to deal with this and I want to put this person in their place. We have to deal with that internal conflict and calm ourselves enough to be able to step outside and now look at the situation and then effectively come up with the right resolution for it. So that's the first thing I think is dealing with that internal conflict. And this other thing that has been really, really effective for me that I have kind of adopted into my leadership style is it's called the Johari window. And it's you really and it works really well, especially when I'm upset about something, because it forces me to step outside and look at the situation from a different set of eyes. So the way it works is it's just a window with the pane, right? It's four windows. You can draw it on any board or whatever. And each particular pane represents something. So the first part of it is what's known. So we'll say the top left, that's what's known, like the situation, what's known about this particular situation that everybody knows, that you know, that the person that you might be offended with or that they're offended with you, that they know. And then the bottom left would be what's hidden, right? So what was hidden? What didn't they see? What didn't they know? What don't you know about the particular incident or situation? And then my favorite one is the top right, which is blind spot. So what's in your blind spot? What didn't you expect? What is the thing that's going to get you in this particular incident or this situation? Like you didn't prepare for that, right? I never expected that to happen because it was in your blind spot, right? And it helps you to prepare for those all of a sudden things that happen in some of these conflict conversations. And then the bottom right is unknown, right? So what is unknown to the situation? What was unknown to that person? Maybe the conflict that you're having is because they didn't have all the information. Maybe something was hidden from them and maybe they didn't know. And now you have the opportunity to educate them about yourself or about the situation. And does that change the overall result? Can you come to a resolution through this? But first and foremost, like I said, dealing with that internal conflict within yourself gives you the opportunity to now kind of work these things out with yourself before you go have a conversation with someone else. And you're able to calmly, and I say calmly, loosely, you're able to calmly walk through and deal with something that might be very tough and difficult to deal with. And it's worked very well for me over the last few weeks, actually. So,
yeah, I remember you described this to me, and I was like, that's a pretty cool method to actually do a little reflection, you know, because normally, and me and Rhodes have had this conversation when we've done something and it didn't get accepted well or received well. Like we were like, we looked like we get on the phone and it's like, where did we mess up? Right? Like something, you know, this thing that's hit a home run 9 times, how come the 10th time this thing didn't hit a home run? And just so happens that 10th time was the time that mattered. You know what I mean? Like, so you look at, that's a good way to look at stuff. And it kind of leads into like, how I feel after becoming a, we were talking about this, how I feel after becoming a supervisor. Like when I was in the back seat, I had zero tolerance for people with a poor skill set or people who were physically weaker and capable. And I moved to the front seat. Like my patience has grown. Like I look at it more as like that's a, you know, the captain's responsibility to make sure the crew's in a ready state at all times. Right. Like, if you've got an issue, you address it from that position. It's not so much on that individual, where like now my impatience is with lateral and upper leadership, you know, like, so like the Johari window would probably be good for me to look outside at conflicts that I'm having with people. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a good, it's a good way of an organized way of reflection. It's like a nice little algorithm, which I feel like we all like.
Yeah. Like everybody likes a template.
Oh yeah. That's we live and die. We love chaos, and we love addressing chaos with templates.
Well, and having the examples around you of being able to take your time. And there's, I mean, we've all taught academies together, and
best one of the best times ever. Of my life. Yeah,
ditto. Ever
out of my head.
And there's times I remember specifically coming in sometimes and being worked up. And it just being like, all right, you're good. Like, give it a second. And practicing that, I think there has to be that trust there, because initially you're thinking like, oh, they don't, why aren't they bothered by this? Like, why? No, you have to take time. You have to take that time to either gather information, to not make an emotional decision, to be able to actually talk to everyone that's involved. But having those examples in front of you, when I was initially promoted, there was people would bring me stuff and I could see me going, okay, we're good. Give me a second. And just taking a second, if without that trust there, creates a like, hey, why doesn't he care? Why isn't he getting worked out about something I care about? He should care. And you're like, no. We just need to take a second. Well, whether that's the second day or whether that's after the 4 day, but having that trust there is a super key component of that handling these conflicts and being able to build that trust within your crew or your battalion, that it's just give me a second so I can go through the process. If it is the Johari window or if it's whatever your process is, that it does take time and not to react emotionally.
Right. That's so true, man. We're taught like time is of the essence with almost everything that we do, right? In the fire industry, in the fire service, you got to hustle, you got to be quick, you got to be on it. But we don't take time with the most important thing that we have is with our internal relationships with each other in the station, because I can't go out and perform if I don't have a relationship with you. If I don't know, if I'm not training with you, I'm not going to perform well with you. And that's just the bottom line.
It's funny you said that, because I was talking to this therapist about like kind of coming in and doing some stuff with us, and it turned into like a little mini therapy session. And she said one of our issues is what you just said, right? Like one of our issues is the order that we bring to chaos that's in our firehouse. Like When you're at supper at your house, do you slap the kitchen table and everybody gets up and starts cleaning dishes and sweeps the floor and mops and takes the trash out? Or just like kids meander out of the room lazily, you've got to yell at them and threaten them with violence to put their plates in the sink. You know what I mean? Like the little bit of order that we actually like love, because it's something that we can control, right? At the firehouse, you don't get that at home, you know, which is which is why there's stress, like why fire wives are saints, right? Because like I come home and there's a plate in the sink or, you know, a basket of laundry that's not folded. I'm like wondering what they did for 72 hours while I was gone, you know, and it's, there's just nothing but chaos at home too. But then you're like, you're telling me you got done eating. You didn't mop the floors in the kitchen like every night. Oh, you don't do that? Oh, hmm. You know, but yeah, so that's that order that we, cause we have control over it. And it's some, like we eat like we're on death row, you know, you just scarf food in your face, you know, and then you sit down and enjoy supper. After you throw your food down your mouth, then you sit around and you enjoy family time. Cause if you get a call, you've already got food in your belly. You know what I mean? It's just weird little things that put stress on our home lives. Cause I don't stop eating like that at home, you know. I inhale my food and I sit around and look at my family while they enjoy their bites.
But, wow. That looks like it really tastes good. I didn't even taste mine. Cause
I breathed it in.
Yeah. I'm going to get a call, honey.
Yeah.
Chief, what are the, one of the last things here was as far as, developing your people. We've spoke about trust, handling issues, building relationships. I know there's being able to equip your people with the tools to grow. And outside, it's a more aerial view, right? Like from within the station, we're doing, you can plan training. Me and Clink were talking yesterday about how our day-to-days have changed. It was before, is there anything on the training scheduling? Oh, okay, cool, great. But now that working on your 4-day to be able to put classes together and you're thinking, you know, more of a global perspective. But from your perspective now as a battalion chief, being able to equip your personnel because you're not doing the minuscule task, what are some things that you plan to put in place or are putting in place to be able to allow your captains to grow?
So this is probably, you know, even as a captain, this is probably the most stressful thing, right? Developing others, because you first have to assess what they want, right? And the reality of it is like people want different things. When I came into the fire service, you know, I saw a battalion chief and I sat back. I was like, I want to do that. Right. So everything that I did from that point was to help me get to where I wanted to go. Right. And some people don't view it like that. Right. And I have to get out of my own way a lot of the times because I saw a vision for myself and I saw a pathway and it was easy for me to follow this pathway. That might not be someone else's pathway. They might stumble upon to a situation that caused them to say, you know what? I want to be a battalion chief. I want to be a captain. I want to be an engineer. I want to be a paramedic. So my prescription isn't always the best prescription, right? It isn't always the best for them. So it's stressful to now kind of sit back and say, okay, what do they want? So that's the first part, is finding out what they actually want. What do they want? What type of leader do they want to be? If we're talking about developing a company officer, or we're developing a paramedic or a firefighter or engineer to be a company officer, right? Determining what they want and what their vision is once they're in a position. Because just like you guys know, we have people that that excel in this position as a company officer, this position as a battalion chief, because, you know, their vision is past that. And we have people that just didn't want to do their last job. And you have to determine if they're going to be effective leaders that way. So, again, that's the first thing I do. Like, hey, what type of leader do you want to be and why? And then really kind of formulate a plan to help them now formulate their own plan for success. Because if it's my plan and if it's my prescription, this is what I did and this is what you need to do, then the heart isn't in it, right? When it's your plan and you put forth the effort, that you have now all the ownership in the world to execute your plan. And you just gave me everything that I needed to, damn you if I needed to, because it was your plan. No, you said that you wanted to do this. You said that you were going to study this amount of time. You said that you were going to put this work in, and you're not doing it, right? Because if it was my plan, I'm going to immediately get attitude. Oh, this is your plan is stupid. No, this is what you said. This is what we sat down and talked about. And this is what you wanted to do. And you're not doing it. Now I get something to hold you accountable to your own ownership. And then helping them execute it, right? Stepping outside yourself, being selfless as a leader is important here, because some of the most stressful times that I've had, like you talked about, like studying for a test and preparing for the position. I had no idea that being in the position and trying to help someone get to their goal was so stressful, because I don't want to be the reason that they mess up. I don't want to be the reason that they fail in their goal. I want to lead them in the right direction, in the right way, and provide the right tools for them to be successful. And it's nerve-wracking. I'm sitting here and I'm sweating. I'm like, man, is this the right stuff? I hope that I've had several people go and take the captain's test, and I'm stressed out while they're going through the process. I'm waiting on a particular time frame for them to be finished. The phone rings. I'm answering it on the first ring. How'd you do? You know, what was it? And then like a sigh of relief of, oh, I helped them prepare the right way. You know, you have to take ownership of it as well, as someone who wants to develop them and help them get to their goals. You have to care. You have to be concerned. It's not just a, hey, I'm gonna help this dude or this firefighter or this person get to their goal. And if they don't get it, it's on them. No, it was complete like stress for me as well. I felt like I was going through it with them as well. And I think that is the only way to be successful, because you're all in too, right? You challenge them, you challenge yourself. And I even speak to this because, you know, you can't think now I've had all that, right? I've helped several people get to the rank of captain. Now, it wasn't me, it was them. No. But you're not helping my point here.
We're sitting right here.
But the reality is now you guys are the people who you both of you got to it because you had the skill set and you had the desire and you had the purpose and the motivation to do it, and not only do it, to do well at it, right? But now here I am and I want to be a battalion chief. Doesn't it make sense that I go back to you and I say, hey, fellas, help me, challenge me? And I ask this question to you. How did you guys feel now when I say, hey, I need your help in preparing for my test? How did that in flip make you guys feel when, as Nick, you were actually preparing for the test as well, and Clink, you were already promoted? But how did that translate to you when somebody that helped you came to you for help?
I mean, obviously, you know, it's a kind of like an honor, right? To have somebody that, you know, taught you, asked for help the same way. I felt like I didn't have much to give you. You know what I mean? But like, it's a bit empowering too. You know, we could have run all kinds of personnel scenarios. You know what I mean? Like, because now your involvement in that's a completely different deal. But like, I don't know, man. It's kind of a big deal to, and you probably even saw this too, precepting, right? Like, you probably picked up little things from I was precepting somebody and they were given their trauma telly, right? And your trauma telly is usually a punch in the mouth from the nurse, usually forget something, right? My first trauma telly was a punch in the mouth. And I walked into that office, I'm like, I want the sheet. Like, give me the sheet that you are asking. And then I kept the sheet and I just read down it, right? Well, the person I was precepting would give a bit of information and say break, and then sit there. And then give a bit of information and say break and sit there. And then give a bit of information and say break and sit there. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, I asked them what they wanted, and they said to give me a break here and a break here and a break here. And I was like, really? Like, that's all you had to do? And they don't punch you in the mouth every time you call them on the radio? So, like, I learned down. You know what I mean? Like, I changed the way I tell it in traumas after that person. You know what I mean? Like, and they killed it. And you're like, oh, wow. I still have stuff I can learn, you know?
Right.
Yeah. There's the sense of pride, like you said, like when you have that ownership at first, like Clink said, you're like, I can't give heck nothing. Like I don't. And then once you're like, well, I'm not saying no to him because I can't say, he never says no to me. I have to figure this out. But then you tap into your own, you feel empowered. So then you're figuring out, okay, a skill set that I have that others may not have. So then you start diving into whether it's, you know, timed PowerPoints or different websites and different, hey, check this out, just to expose different. So you're learning as you're going, but to feel that sense of ownership and going, hey, I'm gonna call you tonight at 9 o'clock. I want to go over apartments. And you're like, all right, well, kids, go away. I have to figure this out because heck's going to call me and I have to do this. And there's a team aspect there that, I mean, being, we were studying together and it was like, okay, we're going to get through this together. But yeah, it's a real prideful thing to go through, to be asked from someone above you that you look up to, one of your mentors, to go, hey, help me. It was definitely a first, which thank you. Appreciate that.
I mean, it dawned on me to say, hey, I need some help studying, right? Because I didn't want to get into that phase of saying or feeling like I knew it all or feeling like I had it all like figured out. I wanted to be challenged. And, you know, unfortunately it gets, and with the testing process, it gets really competitive, right? So who am I going to study with that is going to help me? That's already not a BC, right? And literally, who do I know is going to give it to me straight and is going to tell me, you know what, dude, you sucked, or hey, you need to work on this, or figure out some like crazy scenario that I wouldn't have been able to think on my own, right? And you guys put me through my paces, right? And then, like, I had to think, like, you guys had me running all kind of crazy stuff, which helped me, right? Which prepared me, which I didn't have that, right? So you guys added a different fold to it, which, going back to the development question, because you had to step outside what was comfortable for you and you guys helped me, it really helped you perform on your test, because now you're looking at things from two levels, right? You're looking at things from two levels and not just one. Clink, you're the best dispatcher ever, too, by the way.
Thank you. Clink. Thank you. I forgot about that.
But now, yeah, now he's dispatching and he's providing this information, but it's another set of ears to critique, right? So now I went from racking my brain, trying to run scenarios and reading my own mail, as they say. When you read your own mail, like, everything sounds good. Everything's great. Like, oh man, I killed that BIR. Oh, I killed that employee problem. But to actually get feedback and be like, hey man, you think about this, and be like, oh, I didn't think about that. Right. So it just added a whole nother layer, that helped me be successful. Like, literally, you guys were the reason that I came out where I came out on the test. Right. And I appreciate it.
Of course, man.
Yeah, that's went a different way, but appreciate it. So lastly, I know we spoke about this about a week ago or so. We had spoke about some character strengths or some core values you would expect your captains to have outside of the department's core values. But there's some things that you've dove into that I was like, wow, like that makes so much sense as a leader within a department, within a station. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. This is, I was just trying to think of something that is not catchy, but kind of catchy, like that you can take with you, that you can remember. And, I just remember us having this conversation and it's just leading, right? How like as an officer, our job is to lead, right? To lead when it's pleasant, to lead when it's unpleasant, and to lead when everything is going wrong, right? That's our job, is to lead. And how do we do that, right? How do we lead when everything is maybe not right or everything is right? And I coined it in my head, like, you gotta lead like a G, right? You got to be a G out here in these streets, man. But the G that you got to have is grit and grace, right? These are the two things you have to have as a leader, and especially in the fire service, because having grit is important, because you're going to now step up and face the challenges and the things that are necessary. You're going to deal with that internal conflict when it comes of not wanting to do something or checking yourself if you want to do it too bad. You're going to have the difficult conversations. You're going to give people the opportunity to correct things, and you're going to challenge, and you're going to stand up when things are wrong, whether it's coming from underneath you or coming from above you, right? You're going to have that grit as a leader to be like, no, this isn't right. And this is what we need to do. And the second thing that you need to have is grace as a leader. And it kind of goes into what you were saying earlier, Clint, without even kind of knowing what I was going with this. But you got to have grace as a leader too, because how else are people going to develop unless they make mistakes? Everybody isn't going to kill it on their first try. Everybody isn't going to be the absolute best that they can be on the first try. And now you got to go back to that grit a little bit. How much grit do you have to help them get out of that place that's difficult, that's tough for them? Maybe they found out that their wife's cheating on them. Maybe they are getting divorced. Maybe they have these things going on that are underlying that you have to be able to help them through. So you got to walk that line to have that grit and that grace to help them grow. And the growth is going to come from your leadership and from the direction that you're able to provide, because you're not going to just bounce out on them because it's easy. I mean, I'm sorry, because it's difficult. Like, that guy's crazy. I'm leaving this guy alone. You're not going to leave him out there, right? Because he's your guy, so to speak. So I've been kind of playing with that and working around, but those are two leadership qualities that I think all leaders need to have, especially in the fire service. When you look at having those two things, it's really a basis for more, but you can get so much from both of those, my opinion.
Yeah. And then I know we had spoke about it briefly, and that the grace for me is, especially with the personalities, us and, you know, our peers, that we usually don't show grace within. We're very hard on ourselves, and you can tell yourself, hey, you know what, my crew's gonna make a mistake, or don't be too hard on them. But then on the flip side, go right in the office and kick yourself in the butt for, you know, not doing something that you shouldn't have, or, you know, something, the outcome wasn't what you thought it would be.
Right.
So that grace and being able to have grace for yourself and allowing yourself to grow and not beating yourself up over it, I think is something that we all need to practice.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Fun thing about grit too is that it takes no talent, right? They found that talent, like super high GPA students, like kids, are less gritty than the kids that are below the national average for GPA. So the kids that have to work for it are like those gritty. They view challenges as a marathon. You know what I mean? Instead of the kids who are like super smart that just get it the first go. You know what I mean? That's kind of one of those cool. That's one of those cool things about grit. It's like, it doesn't matter how talented you are or how smart you are, or skillful you are. It's how much you want it. Right. Like right. That's one of the cool things about grit as a trait.
Yeah. And how your verbiage and stuff towards your kids, how you don't say, you know, good job winning the game or whatever. It's right. More so like, I like the way you fought out there today.
Yeah.
You tried, you know, whatever, you know, you're more towards the effort than you are the outcome.
It's all the process. It's all the process. Cause it's, you can have terrible refs. I hate blaming refs. You have bad refs. You can have bad weather. The outcome of a game can be outside of your control. Only thing you can control is the process of how you get there. So like, as long as you emphasize the process with people, that's something that's inside their control. That means they're going to have ownership of it, especially if you view it as like the process as like a marathon. Like, I ain't going to fix this problem overnight. You know what I mean? I'm not going to lose 30 pounds next week. You know, I'm not going to be the best captain within my first year. You know what I mean? Like, as long as you view it like this is my life goal, is to be right. Great at this thing. Like,
yeah. And then it translates. That's my favorite part, is that it translates. Is you can't, like, I mean, hopefully I haven't heard any stories from these last few days out here, but I mean, imagine any major fire these last 2 days with the wind the way it's been. And like, you're like, you, it's a variable you can't control. You can't control if there's a bariatric patient in a burn. Like, you can't beat yourself up over things that are the unknown, that we spoke about. So it's just being able to drive those character traits home. But yeah, awesome. Anything else you want to touch on, Chief?
No, man. I'm here for you guys. It's been great. Thank you guys for allowing me to kind of talk and ramble on a little bit. Appreciate you bringing me on, man, for this season.
Yeah,
for this season of episode
season two, episode one, or season two, episode eleven.
Hey man, it's like, it's not, you're not 6 foot, you're 5'13". Same thing, right? You're 5'13".
Sure,
right?
5'13".
But no, seriously, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for always challenging us to grow, you know, as individuals and as an organization. And thank you guys for your leadership. I appreciate you.
Ditto.
All righty. Chief, real quick, do you want to stick around for our clip of the week?
Sure.
All right, let me play it here.
That's the point. I recognize how hard this is for people. I recognize how hard it is for me. But I have a certain set of skills that allow me to deal with this stuff. And then I realize, with gratitude, optimism is sustainable. If you find something to be grateful for, then you find something to look forward to. Then you carry on.
Write that down. With gratitude, optimism is sustainable.
Yeah. Wow. Chief, go ahead. What's your thoughts on it?
That's powerful, man. That's powerful. When you talk about gratitude, I just want to talk about Michael J. Fox as an actor, right? Like, we all remember him at the prime, at the height of his career, right? I can't remember the sitcom he was on, but he started making movies, right? Like, Back to the Future, dude. Like, I mean, we got the Marty McFly shoes out and out, right? Like, it's so many cultural things that he brought. And I want to talk about standing up to bullies, having grit, right? Marty was small, and in the movies, he stood up to the bullies and he fought against opposition, right? So he's someone that is like a symbol of it. And now here we see him dealing with something that is debilitating, that is difficult to watch, right? It's difficult to experience because we saw him at another place. We saw him performing and inspiring, right? But the reality is, man, where we see him now, I'm more inspired now than I was watching him as Marty McFly in Back to the Future series, right? Because having gratitude, like being able in that position to have gratitude is difficult. It is very difficult to be happy about something when you don't have complete function of your body functions. Like, you can't move the way you want to. And to hear a man be concerned about how other people receive him and to teach me about gratitude, like, I'm blown away, man. That was powerful.
Yeah.
That was powerful.
It's one of those weird things where you're, especially like, you see it with people who've experienced like extreme tragedy, right? Like, do you know who Viktor Frankl is? He was a psychologist. He was I think he was German or Polish, spent time in Auschwitz. And then had like the most positive outlook on life. And that's what he attributed to getting through the concentration camps, right? And it's they've done a lot of research on like that positive emotions. And like, when you hear positive emotions, you think like fake happiness, but focusing mm-hmm. on positive things actually change your neural pathways in your brain. So you're able to catch positive things as they happen more often. Cause that's another trap for us, is we get stuck in seeing awful, awful things like at work. And then, you know, it feels like to each other, but like, you see this awful stuff happen. And you just get stuck focusing on this negative side of the world, where Michael J. Fox is debilitated with Parkinson's, and he's optimistic about the future because he has gratitude and he focuses on positive things. You know what I'm saying? Like, That's a pretty powerful thing that we don't do. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I've tried to gratitude journal. There's no way I'm gonna wake up every morning and write down positive things in a journal. I can't do it. So you got to find other ways to like fill your time with positive endeavors so that you start focusing on positive things in your life. Because otherwise you just come home and it's just, there's dishes in the sink and laundry in the basket. You don't understand what these people have been doing while you've been gone. You know what I mean?
I just saw that video of Josiah, who's the basketball coach, who was the coach for the Celtics. He had gotten suspended for a couple days. I think he's with the Suns now, or mm-hmm. I forget where he's at. But I just saw a video earlier of him, and he had gotten suspended. And the reporter was like, "How have you been dealing with, you know, the suspension?" He's like, "Honestly, I just got to meet three young women that are under the age of 20 that all have terminal cancer, and they all have smiles on their face, and they're still living their day, and it really." Very quickly put me into a perspective where I coach a game. I coach a children's game. And why am I, like, who cares? Why am I even worried about being suspended? He's like, as fast as that was for me, the optimism he had after that. I mean, it's unfortunate, I think, for people to be in that, that have to be in that situation to open their eyes to something like that, or Michael J. Fox to go, "Hey, I'm good. I got optimism." And that's what makes everyone else kind of kick into gear and have some like, "Oh wow, then what am I complaining about?" So I think it needs to be practiced. It's something that you have to be aware of, and we all slip, you know, every now and then, but being aware of having that gratitude that whether it's things are great or things aren't always going to be bad, is a great perspective to have. And I like that clip.
Yeah, that was good, man.
Well, cool. All right, Chief. That'll wrap up episode 11, aka
season two, episode one.
All righty. Thanks, Chief.